Weekly Dose of Fat, show number 97 for Friday, March 11th, 2016.
Welcome back to the Tonight Show with our guest host, Joan Rivers.
I'm Cowboy Curtis. And over yonder is Sven.
Guten Tag, mein Fräulein.
Mecca Lecca Hi, Mecca Hein Ho.
Hey, tonight's show is brought to you by The Surly.
Bikes, parts, chaos.
Learn more at surlybikes.com.
What's on the show this week?
We start the show off with the vet of the week. We check in with the Fatty Fard Field Report, brought to you by Quiring Cycles. Quiring is an award-winning frame maker that builds plus, fat, and monster fat omni-terrain bicycles designed to run up to an unbelievable 5.6-inch tire. Visit QuiringCycles.net and check out the next level of bicycle exploration. We welcome the 2016 Iditarod Trail Invitational Champion, our friend, Mr. Tim Burnson. We'll talk about our spring shearing contest and drink and we'll drink airline bottles of cognac.
For real?
In this Classy. Evening's special segment, Mr. Will Ross is bad ass.
To the bone, yo.
And now,
it's time for the Fat Bike Event of the Week. Is there something we should be doing here? Or should we talk to maybe Chris Daisy?
Cue Chris Daisy on
Chris Daisy on line one. Line. Chris Daisy.
In 3, 2.
Like 20 seconds ago.
Sure.
I've never heard of the guy.
I hear he's handsome. He's a very handsome guy.
That I have heard, yes.
Holy crud. How's it going, dude?
It's going well.
Welcome to the Weekly Dose of Fat.
Here on Fat Bike Radio.
The event of the week. So you're here to talk to us about the Zion Fattest Sprang Flang, an event for Chicago fat bikers, which I have.
Do they have to be from Chicago?
No,
just checking.
There's a big group of Chicago fat bikers. They're true that. Into it, yo.
But yeah. But Zion's not Chicago.
Yeah, and, but
that's actually northern or southern Wisconsin.
There's a White Castle on the way, though.
True that. I believe we stopped there twice on our last trip down
there.
One,
and back.
Once on the way down and once on the way back. Right so, there about Kawashika. What do they call that place down there?
Chris.
Canover.
Chris, tell us about your event.
Yes, you have an event.
Yes. Well, they're kicking it off from our shop at high noon. And looks to be a couple different mileage options, 8-mile southern portion of beach riding, and then a little longer 20-mile trip to hit the northern section of beach and gravel. Looks like it's a possible foul weather situation, so if things are, you know, on the halfway decent side, I'm sure they'll still continue, but if it's pouring rain, I would check the Facebook page just to
wait, see. What? You guys don't ride in rain? Come on, no.
I would, but I mean, this is what they told me. I'm not hosting the event myself.
Oh, I see. So this is actually the city of Zion, right?
This would be the Zion Fair Weather Fatty Spring Fling. Well, we should probably get the word out to all those fat bike fender companies.
So it's a prime opportunity to get your wares out in front of people who actually use it.
Yeah. Go out there and...
I know SKS makes them. We got we got Dave's mud shovels.
We have a new one in from Planet Bike that Mr. J.K. Levin over there is gonna test fly. It's fly by wire kind of set up there, you know, heads up display on them and AM/FM.
I get to play in puddles.
Is that stereo? Is that stereophonic? Hey,
So nice. So, see, we have some other, you know, the reason that we lured you here is not just for the event of the week. Really, we want to maybe spill the beans on your mountain bike festival and talk about maybe some of our hijinks for April riding in Port Washington. With some, there's some sort of big bike sale or something, but...
Yeah, we have our 100th show, too, right?
You know, the Hunter Show.
Hundo.
Oh, yeah, we have the 100th show thing going
100th
on.
100th show thing.
But, you know, that's, you have to put on your music director hat for that. Have you picked out a sport jacket for your stage presence?
Maybe. I've definitely been putting some thought towards my stage outfit, yeah.
All right. And, yeah, you know, if you've got any inroads on polar bear costume, you're the one that finally like got me leaning towards a costume instead of a live polar bear. So
with gold chain
insurance.
Yeah, Chris is also our insurance guy. He's music, graphics,
and
bike slinger
and conscience
policy writing
and indemnification.
Wow.
There's got to be a furry convention rocking around Chicagoland area.
Furry?
Yeah, the furries.
There you go. You know, like maybe
dress up like
polar bear
mascot
or polar bear furry costume is what I've got to search.
Yeah, you're going to have a good time.
We're on it.
Get right on it.
Let the adventure begin. Ladies and gentlemen, that has Chris Daisy from Zion Cyclery. He's a musician. He is our musical director. And
we're not getting rid of him yet, are we? I don't even think we learned anything from him yet. I'm just
letting you guys talk.
Right.
I was just fucking Edward Murrowing his ass off the show.
So we can't break the news that he's going to be up here for our show?
Oh, yeah. We could talk about that. Sure.
Yeah,
did I break something up we shouldn't be talking about yet?
No. Our 100th show, it's going to be a big celebration. We have a space, and we're going to like freaking
it's a large space.
We're going to have a huge derby.
Speaking.
We're going to hand out our first Bike Black Ribbon Derby merit badges at that derby, and we're going to have a skid contest. We're going to have a criterium. We're going to have what else?
I know we got live lots music. Of stuff going on. We're gonna have live music with Chris Daisy and the Shadaisies.
No.
No, wait, what?
Smooth Chris, evil.
smooth evil.
Smooth evil. Yeah. And we may have a battle of the bands. We might get Mike and So Far So Bad. We might get those guys showing up doing battle of the bands
simultaneously.
With Chris.
Kegs flowing, rock and roll going. People riding bikes around inside, it's going to be
and or
awesome.
Outside, depending on the weather.
And or outside, yeah. So, yeah, that's on April 1st, and you'll see an event going down. Chris just did the flyer for it and has it. It's, yeah, we got it. What do you think about putting black tape over our eyes?
Yeah, maybe with a cross pattern, like an X.
Any tweaks you need.
There you go.
Look it up.
I want an X over my eyes. I don't want anybody to recognize me.
Yeah.
Like the Kardashian.
Oh.
Over blacks.
We should just have Kardashian faces.
Well, then I'd just put them on my nipples.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Chris.
I already blacked out your nipples.
No, thanks. Spank you, Chris. We got to go.
Have we learned enough now?
We'll keep the rest a secret.
Yeah, we're gonna have to go ahead and we'll let you go, and we're gonna take a break, and when we come back, we're gonna talk to Mr. Tim Bernston. He just won some fancy race or something up there in Alaska.
He just won the Super Bowl.
There you go. We'll talk to him right after this from our fantastic sponsors.
Whether you carry your bikes on your roof or with a hitch, the best way to get your fat bike to the trail is with a rack from 1UP USA. 1UP USA uses stainless steel hardware on their all-aluminum racks and come with a lifetime warranty. 1UP USA racks are made in the USA, right in Wisconsin. Visit 1UpUSA.com for more information on the fastest loading, highest quality rack solutions.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome to the program Mr. Tim Bernstein.
Hey, Sven and Gomez. How you doing?
Oh, man. Right. It's awesome to have you on the line.
Hey, congratulations on the big win at the ITI, man.
Thanks. I'm pretty happy about it.
Yeah, this has really kind of been your year with wins in the Susitna, now the ITI, to McGrath. I mean, you know, this is like, how's the stars aligning to make all this work for you?
I don't know. They fit in with what I was doing for the winter, and I wasn't actually sure that I was actually going to do the Susitna. It was only 2 weeks out from the ITI, and I was actually a little bit concerned that I'd be a little bit tired out for the ITI. But I guess with 14 or 15 days between the races and the fact that the Susitna was a real fast race this year, I mean, fast as in the conditions were great. So had it been a slog or a snowstorm in the middle of it, I guess the recovery could have been quite different. But as it turned out, it was actually probably pretty good. And I came into the ITI pretty well rested and feeling pretty good.
So the Susitna is like a 100 miler, right? Then the ITI was 350. So, and I was just talking to Will Ross, who just won the Fat Bike Berkey, and he did the Arrowhead 135, yeah. And he did a couple other longer races. And he was like, I don't know if I pushed myself too hard. So, you know, because the Fat Bike Berkey is only 47K, you know, but it's a fast and rolly, it's a really punchy course. How does something like when you're doing these longer races, how does that, you know, does that affect your like ability to do these shorter ones?
It probably does a little bit. I think my age probably does as much as anything. I definitely notice I don't have, whether it's because I've been doing more of the ultra races in the wintertime and it's summertime to a certain respect, it's probably killed a little bit of the speed I felt I used to have. But then again, in a, you know, doing those kind of races, especially the, you know, Susitna, the 100 miler type ones, you do develop a huge bunch of endurance. So I know I did the Fat Bike Berkey a couple of years ago and actually didn't feel too bad about 2 weeks out after the ITI. So I'm sure Will, based on how he did in the Berkey, his legs must have felt all right.
Yeah, I think he did. He did a fantastic job. And Brad Bingham, it was his first year there. And boy, he was strong. He's a strong guy.
So anything?
Yeah, they seem to be getting new guys. You know, just at least a few new people up at the top of that group every year, and you know, Will keeps on knocking them down.
Yeah,
for real.
Yeah. So anything new this year in your training or diet or preparation? Because this year you really broke through. I mean, you were a perennial podium guy previous years, and you were always a threat to win, and you would win you've won the whites a couple of times, right? And Susitna before.
I mean, I felt pretty good the last couple of years. I mean, I didn't do the ITI last year, but I did end up winning the Susitna and the White Mountains, and you know, was a second in the Arrowhead, so I felt the fitness was pretty much there. I don't know that I did a whole lot differently. Just put a lot of time in riding, probably put maybe a few more multi-day weekend rides in than I have in the past, to where you can get kind of back-to-back long days riding. Other than that, probably pretty similar, and I just think I probably went into it maybe a little bit more motivated than I have in the past. And I don't know, the last two times I did the ITI, you know, in 2013, there was basically five of us that were riding together in Nikolai, and we were all pretty trashed when we got there, and Jay Peterberry decided to leave when the other four of us decided to rest, and I guess we rested a little bit too long. Mm-hmm. Jay was able to pull that one out, kind of a cagey move, I guess. And then the next year I was with Kevin right back at the, you know, in Nikolai, and we basically left there pretty much together, but he had been, I felt like I was probably riding pretty strong most of the race, but I did feel like from probably 30 miles out of Nikolai that Kevin seemed to have just a bit more in him at that time than I did, and that proved true when we, you know, went from Nikolai to McGrath.
Right.
I got a question.
It definitely felt like it was pretty strong this year. So, I mean, I felt really good in both the races that I've done.
Right on. I mean, that's fantastic. What I'm thinking when you're talking about these, you know, long distances, but lately they've been going really fast. So, you know, maybe in the olden days, you had to be more of an adventurer on the trail to, you know, but you still have to know how to stay warm when it's 30 below, just in case it isn't. And so how do you prepare for something, you know, like that when you're, you know, you don't know this year if it's going to be a 19 hour thing or a 40 hour thing. You don't know. So how do you prepare for it?
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely get to be a little bit more interesting the longer it went, because then people are going to have to start figuring out, you know, how long they should rest, where they should rest, you know, make sure that you're eating well. And I think in a year like it has been the last basically 3 years, you can kind of put some of that aside and just work off of, I don't know, adrenaline or
body fat, maybe with your 6% or whatever you have.
Any of those things. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that, I know I talked to John Lackey about this last year, and him and I kind of agreed that if we thought it was going to be a 2-ish day race, that you probably really don't need to sleep. So, you need to rest, you need to take a break at the checkpoints and whatnot, but I don't know that you necessarily need sleep. It's probably different for each and every person, but I do know that the year before, or in 2000, I guess it would be 13, when we got to Nikolai, we were 2.5 days in, and I think I was probably to the point where I needed to actually sleep. So, where this year, and the last time I did it, we finished before that 2.5 day mark, and probably didn't need to sleep as much. But that probably is pretty dependent on the person that's out there, and it definitely helps to have done it and gone longer, so you have an idea how your body reacts in those times, I guess.
Isn't it interesting to talk to a guy who actually does this stuff?
Absolutely.
Because this is like nobody else anywhere can get this kind of like preparation knowledge from somebody that's actually been out there and done it.
And we get to talk to Jay before the ITI, between the Arrowhead, and he was all kind of hyped up. He's like, yeah, I kind of can't wait to get out there and really put the pace to the elite group and see what they can handle for the run to McGrath. And we really do get to, it's really a privilege to talk to you guys that do this thing. And if we could share with our listener at home, maybe how the race shook out this year, maybe some of the details of the tactics and how you managed to ride 350 miles in 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of expecting, I guess, kind of what we got, in that it was going to be fast up until maybe 120, 130 miles in, and then it was going to start to slow down a bit, and then hopefully, I guess, it would pick back up for the last 120 miles or so. And that's essentially what it did, but it was really fast that first, I guess, through the Yetna Station checkpoint, through Skwentna, and then pretty much past Shell Lake Lodge is 15 miles out of Skwentna, and somewhere outside of Shell Lake Lodge, the conditions started to kind of deteriorate a little bit. But I do think that the speed of the beginning of the race kind of messed with all of us a little bit, in that we weren't totally expecting it to be that fast for that long. And even coming into Skwentna, which is about or approximately 90 miles in, you know, usually that's a place in the past where I've stopped and sat down for an hour and grabbed a bite to eat and then left, not in a super big hurry, where this year I kind of sat down, grabbed a real quick bite to eat, and then left, you know, maybe a half hour, 20 minutes, a half hour earlier than I have in the past, because same thing, like Jay Peterberry had left Squinting after basically just coming in. I think he maybe chugged a Coke or something and then filled his water bottle, his bladder, and took off. So, yeah, it was just there was a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Not anticipation, but in a hurry. We were in a hurry.
Got it. Because that first part of the race, following you, following the blue dots, you were on world record setting pace for that first section.
Yeah. Yeah. And it helps. I mean, like, you know, people don't know who Tyson, I mean, people at least probably in the ultra biking world don't know who Tyson Flaherty is, but he was kind of a badass skier in his day. And, some of us have up here ridden with him in road races, and he did the Susitna last year, and he's a pretty fast dude. And so when he gets things figured out, he's going to be kind of a bear to deal with for everybody else.
Hey, more competition to make our fat bike world more friendly.
Nice. You got
to
get him riding a fat back if he isn't already.
Yeah, he should. They keep winning. So,
why don't you just, if you could real quick, just kind of go through the rig you rode. How did you have it set up? What tires, what frame, you know, just kind of how is a guy that does this, you know, fantastic thing? What does he ride?
Well, I ride a fat back, and I have since I've started. Greg Mattis at Speedway Cycles or Fatback Bikes. I've been, I guess, in and around him since I started actually riding or bicycle racing in 2008. I guess it was. And so way back then, not that long ago, but
right?
It seems like a long time.
Oh, it does. It does. But in a fat bike world, that's like last century.
Yeah.
But yeah, right on. I apologize for intruding on your description of your race winning rig, but
he has a brand new like a powder blue Corvus, right?
It was a glacier blue Corvus.
Oh, glacier blue.
That fits in with the ice and the snow theme of being outside in the wintertime. Now, beautiful. Yeah, it was new in I think I got it in January. And so some of the bits and stuff that are on it have been around with me for a while, but for the most part, the frame is pretty much the same as last year's Corvus, and it's just a different color scheme and maybe a slightly different layup on the carbon, so it's a tad stiffer frame than the ones from last year.
Mm-hmm. And you were run a 1x11?
I used a 1x11, so I had a 32 tooth. Oval front chain ring and, you know, the 1042 cassette from SRAM. Mm-hmm.
What did you do for tires? Tires are, like, obviously very important.
Yeah, very important. I thought about that a lot over the course of the weeks leading up to it. And, you know, in the end, having some studded tires with the varying terrain is probably the best thing. So I went with Dillinger 5s. I borrowed a set from Greg.
Killer.
To run on some those new Kuroshiro 105 rims. Oh. So I had nice big rims.
Our buddy Tim Krieger.
Five-inch
tires, and yeah, they're pretty sweet.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool news. That's a feather
It was basically probably a perfect combination for that kind of a race. I mean, we had soft conditions from, like I said, just before Finger Lake to the top of Rainy Pass, where having a little bit wider tire and rim combination was pretty helpful, and I don't think it was too much of a detriment on the rest of the ride either. So those things roll pretty fast.
So yeah, that's something that I think is awesome about like a 5-inch Dillinger. They really roll a lot faster than you think they would.
Oh yeah,
you that's look at them and you're like, tire. Oh no, it's gonna be slow, but they're very. They roll pretty good.
And you put that on a light carbon rim. But anyway, before old Sven jumped in and we started talking about equipment, you were talking about the trip to the pass. You were talking about the first part being really fast. And then you hit a section where you did some pushing, right?
Yeah. I don't know the actual how much we pushed. We definitely pushed over 50% of our time. I don't know that we pushed 50% of the mileage, but yeah, we left Finger Lake, and it was pretty. Or I left there first, and it was pretty slow going. Kind of, you know, the trail at that point is no bigger than a snow machine, and there's a lot of snow out there, so fairly high sides, basically snowbanks.
Mm-hmm.
And there was kind of a, you know, covering of fresh snow, and then like a corrugated snow machine trailer had been through beforehand. So it kind of made traveling on it pretty slow, and you'd kind of wash out from time to time. And then shortly thereafter, there was a moose that decided to use the trail because, you know, they like an easy trail as much, sure, as the next person.
So yeah.
They kind of post-holed through there, and so you're kind of bouncing around. And it wasn't like the best riding ever. You could ride some of it, but then you'd have to walk some of the hills. And then the further along we got, kind of ran into another moose that was on the trail and doing the same thing. And so it was kind of an uncomfortable riding, slow riding, and then, you know, with pushing mixed in. And then as we got closer to Puntilla Lake, where our checkpoint is, the snow was pretty windblown. So we'd go across there, and you'd think there's a good trail, but then you'd end up, you know, your front tire'd wash out, or you'd dig in with your back tire and then hop off and push for a while and then try riding again. So
was it warmer than normal? Like, you've done this before.
Definitely, it was way warmer than it normally was. So I don't know that it dropped below 20 degrees the entire race. So it was 45 at the start. Most of the days, I think, were above freezing. Maybe when we were going up Rainy Pass, that section of it, there was a pretty stiff wind. It was still relatively warm outside, but I guess the wind chill was a little bit cool. And then coming into Nikolai on, I guess it would have been Tuesday morning, you know, it was pretty windy. It wasn't terribly cold or anything like that, but it was, I guess, cool. I had to zip up a little bit because of that. But otherwise, from the start to the finish, I didn't change clothes once. So thin Ibex base layer, wool base layer, and a shell jacket over the top of it, and that was all.
Yeah, that was something that our Fat Bassiter Travis, I think he mentioned that people weren't starting in their really cold gear because it just was that warm outside.
Yeah, no, it was super warm. And actually, a big chunk of it, not a big chunk, but going up Rainy Pass, I actually had my shell jacket off and I just had a thin base layer on. So, and I wasn't the only one that did that. Tyson, who I was kind of traveling with at the time, he was like that quite a bit, actually. But he's from Fairbanks. He's used to the cold.
did you see that picture of Spinner in his Viking outfit at the Berkey?
I did. He was in the video that we had on the site today.
That was so cute.
So when did you pull out into the lead, and how long did you stay out there, and did you know where anybody was behind you? Was it maybe give us the roan to the finish kind of scenario?
Yeah, and that's kind of where it was. I mean, Tyson and I got to roan at the same time. You know, they fed us there great. I got all my stuff kind of ready to go, and then they have a wall tent for us to use to rest in, and there's a bunch of spruce boughs on top of a bed of snow. And mm-hmm. So both of us laid down there to take a quick nap, and I had one of the checkers had set an alarm for 20 minutes for me. And so I just kind of laid down, I mean, tried to rest, relax as much as I could. It is pretty hard to actually sleep in a race like that, just because it's hard to get yourself and bring yourself, calm yourself down, I guess, because you're always semi-worried where everybody else is, how everybody else is feeling, and whether or not you should actually be riding instead of resting. But I laid down for 20 minutes. When I got up, I was pretty much ready to go and probably was back on the trail within about 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes of actually getting up. And that was, I don't know how much before Tyson. I thought he said he left maybe 15 minutes after I did, 10, 15 minutes after I did, but I don't know that for a fact. But I basically started off from there just trying to hold a steady pace, but not get too crazy with it. It's such a long stretch of trail, and the start of it especially, there's lots of ups and downs, and easy to get yourself tired out. And if your adrenaline is really going, you can kind of waste yourself in the first half of that ride, and making the second half coming into Nikolai really really draining and tiring, especially with the you know, lack of sleep and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, I was probably 5, 6, 7, 8 miles in, and I looked back for a see if I could see a headlamp, and I saw one, at least I thought I saw one, and was pretty confident that that was Tyson. And I don't know, from that point on, I guess I felt like I rode as fast as I could for the distance I was going, in hopes that if Tyson did catch me, that he was pretty worked for catching me. And if he didn't, hopefully I could maybe put some time into him on the way to Nikolai. But to be honest, I kind of, when I left Roan, had fully expected Tyson to catch back up to me at some point, either because he was riding really strong or because I was, you know, faltering at some point in time. But
what was the margin of victory?
I actually don't know the exact margin, but it was about 2 hours. It may have been like 140.
I mean, that's a long time, because it's such a tactical race in some ways, and you play the game better than most everybody else out there, obviously, or you wouldn't win this race.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I guess it is. The hard part to know, and what I wanted to have happen in that last section, is I didn't want Tyson to see me. Like, I didn't want him to see my headlamp. I didn't want him to see me, because there's always a little bit of extra motivation, you know, if you see the guy ahead of you, sure, or even for that matter, if you see the guy behind you, you can kind of, and generally speaking, it's a little bit easier for the guy behind you to catch random glimpses of the person in front. So I really didn't want him to see me again and get a little boost of adrenaline, a little boost of, confidence that he was catching me. And so when I got to Nikolai, I got in there and just basically did what I had to do, grabbed a bite to eat, grabbed a Coke, rested my legs for 20 minutes, and was back on my bike and out the door about 30 minutes later. And the coming into Nikolai, you have to actually backtrack for about a half mile. So there's a section of it where if he'd have been coming in, he'd have seen me going out. And so I tried to get out of there and back down on the river before, you know, he could catch a glimpse of me during that period. And so I was pretty happy when I got out of there, knowing that I had at least a half hour, 40-minute lead on him, leaving Nikolai, and knowing that it's pretty confident that he would go into Nikolai having to grab a bite to eat and, you know, do something. And if he didn't, you know, more power to him if he could get back on the trail without grabbing some kind of normal food and in a Coke and then, you know, catch back up, because that'd be pretty awesome.
So you do keep saying Coke. So is it specifically Coca-Cola that you drink? Is it the sugar?
Yeah, just Coca-Cola. Sorry, yeah.
No, I love that stuff. I can't drink it anymore because I'm old and half diabetic, but I do love me some Coca-Cola.
Yeah, Coca-Cola. Not the other kind of Coke.
No. That wasn't what I was implying. Just that it was actually not Pepsi or Royal Crown or some of these other pretenders.
How many hours the fugitive running from and trying to hide from the pursuers? Like 6 hours, 10 hours out in front? That was just work your noodle, wouldn't it?
Right. Oh, I mean, how long was I? Like, yeah. From Roan to Nikolai, I think, was 9 hours, maybe, because I think I left Roan around 11 p.m. and arrived in Nikolai at 7:45 a.m., so just under 9 hours. And then I left Nikolai at, I think, 8:15 and arrived in McGrath at 1:45. Yeah. So that would have been that period of time. So basically 11 p.m. on Monday night till 1:45 p.m. on Tuesday.
That's just such a kick-ass story, and I'm just couldn't be more pleased that
you Sven got is this looking win. Like an imbecile, because he's like, "What, really? That's so kick-ass."
No, here's the funny part is that, and this I got a present from Greg after the race, which is a beer. But nice. I don't know if you followed the tracker at all, but I actually took a wrong turn on that last section of the race and went about 2 miles off course and then had to backtrack 2 miles. So Yeah, you know,
so 354 miles.
Well, and then the funny part was is that you know, I'm imagining, you know, my friends and some family members at home on their computer shouting at it. Like, what is he doing?
What is
Which
he
is what
doing?
I was thinking.
Well, that's not where the course goes. Why is he going over there? I mean, I think they got a good breakfast over there on whatever that place is now.
So,
but anyways, I got a beer from Greg, and he pulled the label off of a good IPA, and he made his own label, and it's called the Fatback Backtrack IPA. 297.4 IBUs.
he is a handsome gentleman. Greg Mattis guy.
Handsome.
Oh, yeah. He is a handsome devil. So you are one of the legendary nice guys of fat bike racing. Everyone I talk to, and I have spread the rumor myself liberally that you are one of the nicest
liberally.
Guys. So my question to you is, what really rubs your rhubarb?
I'm not that. I mean, I'd rather be known as a nice guy.
So nothing. Nails it on the chalkboard.
Well, no, I don't want to be.
He has no rhubarb.
I don't want to give races to anybody either. So I think it was, I don't know. I know I've talked to Kevin about like the year before when I helped him out with his tire change. And, you know, it didn't have any bearing on the end result of the race. And I have no doubt that in a similar circumstance that he would have done the same thing for me. And, you know, if on a race like that, I mean, you do what you can to help, you know, help other people out if needed without getting too crazy, too crazy about it. I mean, if somebody pulls into a checkpoint and they got a flat tire, they're on their own to fix their flat tire. But, you know, if it's cold out and somebody's having a problem, and if you can offer a little bit of help to them, you know, you should probably do it.
Because you never know when there's going to be a moose on the trail and you're going to be looking for somebody to hide behind.
Yeah, exactly.
Strength in numbers, right?
You know, here's the good thing about Alaska. I don't think they actually have polar bears there.
This is true. They do not have
polar bears. They have
big brown bears.
Otherwise, those things would chase the shit out.
Polar bears in Alaska, just not on that trail.
Not on that particular trail. Yeah. Right on.
Yeah. No, much farther north.
Because they were covering their nose.
No, the one of the checkers at the owners at the house in Nikolai had actually asked me when I got in there, she's like, where's your partner? And I just told her that I don't have any partners in the race. I have some friends.
Is this a trick question?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, just what you need.
Did you just say meow? Damn it.
No. That's JK shaking his head.
JK wants to know, we're going to talk to Tim Burns and write meow.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on the show, Tim. Congratulations on the big win, man.
Yeah, and by the way, I gotta be honest, this is probably the bulk of our show was talking to Tim because he was a great guest, because we don't have a whole lot more substance to this show.
So are you gonna do the White Mountains 100s or the Talkeetna Trio?
Yeah, two more races. Well, yeah, both of those, actually. The Talkeetna Trio is on this Saturday, which is a 20, 40, or 60-mile race.
So world championships.
Race. Yeah, and actually both that and the White Mountains. Which
intergalactic championships.
Both will be very competitive. So a lot of people. Will Ross is, I think, signed up to do both of them. And then some of the other, mostly Alaskan racers, but they're all... Everybody there, you know, they're all really strong racers. They're used to doing those kind of things.
Let's see how Will does.
Tyson is doing the White Mountains.
Will admitted that he was a little knackered after the Berkey. So he was like, I didn't know if I could recover from that really long because he did the Arrowhead. He's like, that taxed me a little bit.
Well, Tim, we wish you nothing but...
Yeah, hopefully you're still tired because I am.
We wish you nothing but continued excellent form and good health, and really appreciate you coming on the show.
Is phantasmagorical actually a real word? Because that's what I'm going to say to Tim. That was phantasmagorical.
Indeed. I concur.
I'll take it.
All right, Tim.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
What a great one. Right on. What a great guest. Fantastic. Tim. We should probably Tim's take a man. Just a brief, I don't know what you call it. What do you call it? Break or a, mm-hmm. Or whatever. We're going to take one of them and then we'll come back with
the question of the week.
The question of the week.
Or the question of the week.
Or
the question of the week.
So I heard you need a fat bike. Come to Zion Cyclery in Zion, Illinois. We have all brands. Trek, Borealis, Salsa, Felt, Surly, and more. Yo, we have all the cold weather gears by 45 North and Bontrager. Keep those fingers and toes nice and toasty. We fix bikes also. So you have any problem? Brakes, gears, suspension? We have the best mechanics in town. So yeah, visit us at ZionCycler.com.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Fat Radio.
Hey, all right. I have no idea how it happened, but we're actually back now. And I think it's question of the week time. I just thought about this because I was up at the Berkey and I thought, wow, is this the best of fat biking? Because there was 1,100 plus fat bikers. Just a huge amount of people fat biking.
The regal and pageantry, the banners flapping in the breeze.
Absolutely. And what the thing that bummed me out was, this is the highlight of the year. I'm like, no, it's really not, because I'm the guy that's been riding a fat bike pretty much as my only bike for over 5 years now.
You're that guy.
And I get it. Here's something maybe people don't know. The first guy I saw that I thought was cool on a fat bike was my friend over there, Mr. Gomez. You had the freaking Pugsley, dude.
I had single speed and then a roll off on
my bike. God. And I now love roll offs. Everybody knows that. But anyway. So the end of the Berkey means it's kind of the end of the winter season, and it pisses me off when people say fat bikes are only for snow. It's like, right. No, they're not.
They're not.
There was a deal. You get Bicycle Retailer, don't you?
I do not.
Oh, you should get that, because that's our industry's pulse. And what they asked the question last week, which was, do you basically sell fat bikes? And it was a lot of places from Oregon and California and this and that. And there was like 12 bike shops, and most of them were like, yeah, people special order them, blah, blah, blah. There was one shop in Iowa who said, oh, we love them fat bike things, blah. But here's my point. Fat bikes are for all season, all reasons. And
Preach it, brother.
Damn it. I'm getting all proselytizing over here, but.
And the next season is?
Fat bike season.
Yeah.
So my point.
Oh, you mean your winter bike?
Well, you know, you could break it into substrates. It's like, well, during when the trails, the snow's gone, the trails are all soup, go to the beach. So springtime, ride your fat bike on the beach.
Yeah.
Find sand.
And who doesn't, if you haven't ridden on the beach on a fat bike when it's 80 degrees outside, that's pretty much heaven.
I know. It's like, yeah. Bikes, beer, beach. So this weekend is the U.S. Fat Bike Beach Championships.
Yeah, man.
Down in North Carolina.
Our North Carolina. Sean
Spencer. South Padre Island in Tejas is looking for a beach festival to wrap their city around. And we're discussing about maybe doing something in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so we have a question out to our brethren. You can call 918-818-2453 anytime, day or night. But here's the question. I think
you said that wrong. It's 818-918. You said 918-818.
Shut up.
918-918-2453. That's 818-918.
If they don't know the number by now, then go,
oh dear.
If our listener doesn't know our phone number by now. Anyway, so our question of the week is like, what? Because Sean Spencer's thing is a crit, which seems interesting. So that's one format for a beach race,
but also timed kind of like a cyclocross race.
Right. So cyclocross to me implies a little more variance to the course.
And mandatory dismounts.
Mandatory.
You know.
We got the
carryovers.
Well, we have your, I mean, not that you invented it in the history of the world, but you invented it in Fat Bikeville.
It's kind of
team
like,
Enduro.
Right. It's kind of like the little 500 at the University of Indiana. It's kind of like where I stole the idea from. So it's not like a big thing.
Well, but it was yours.
It's like that.
But it's yours.
Oh, I'm stolen Fat idea. Bikes. Oh, okay.
But Billions. Unbelievably, he came up with another one. We were talking on the phone today, and he said,
Beach, Fat Bike Beach Steeplechase. Yeah.
Really? So, this is where we're going now.
So you got to have, it's feet wet, dude. You're going to definitely have to like haul your bike over shit into water. You're going to have to ride out to a sandbar through deep water, maybe swim.
I know fat bikes float, so it's pretty easy.
And it's, you know, it's going to be, it's just going to be just terrific. Kids are going to want to get special shoes.
They're going to want to name their kids Gomez.
Well, maybe that would go too far. But, you know, speaking about going too far, you know what's pretty far is the Fatty Farm Field Report.
Fatty Farm Field Report.
Hey, this week's Fatty Farm Field Report is presented by Acquiring Cycles.
You did them before. I want to do them now. You did them early in the show. Can I
all
do them now?
But that was when I was all being all bête noir. And,
all right. So this week's. No, I'm going to do it now. Hey, this week's Fatty Farm Field Report is presented by Quiring Cycles. The Quiring Triple B is the fattest ride on two wheels. Visit QuiringCycles.net to see the next level of bicycle exploration.
We'll have that
link in the show notes just in case you didn't understand me when I told you that is QuiringCycles.net.
Click it.
So, by the way, the spring cheering of the beards are here.
Yeah, and you didn't even open the box of freaking prizes that you
I
guys
am
shoot.
Not going to shear my beard.
You're not?
Well,
down
not,
to a quarter
not,
of an inch?
Not till at least April 1st.
Well, April 1st. Are we going to do it at the big 100 year or right before? Gotta do it.
How much does this hair actually weigh?
I don't know. I'm guessing I can't guess because I'm not. I'm
no, I'm just, like, I mean, are these like this? Like, we're talking here. How about because one person or two or three, you, me, and JK, that's not much of a variance. So things weigh what they weigh. But how about we just get everybody at our party to shave their beards? We'll put it all in a bag.
We'll put it all in a bag and we'll weigh that.
That whole thing.
All right, so
we need
a baba.
We
need a baba chair.
What do you mean you need a baba?
Yeah.
All right, we can do that.
At the party, because we're going to have a skid contest. What's the big deal? Like, we're going to skid? What's
through your hair?
It's two more phone calls to get a baba and a baba chair.
Right?
Probably the same baba probably has a baba chair. We need a portable one, because those things weigh a fucking
112. It's not our job. The barbers got to bring their own chair
because
they're going to get
have
tips.
Some charity in
people
your heart, bro.
Are
so you didn't even open them. You didn't even open the box of prizes. So we
Wait,
got like
what?
A shit ton of stuff, dude.
I saw the stickers. What was I supposed to see?
Surly Large Marge Rims.
Oh.
RSD Bikes up there in Canada.
That's because you put your freaking backpack on it. I had no idea we were supposed to own that.
And shirts from Framed Bikes. Borealis sent us water bottles, shirts, bunch of decals. And
Deckles.
We have stuff coming in from Bontrager and
Schlick
Maxis
Cycles.
And
can throw a few
Schlick
water.
Cycles? Really?
We'll throw a set of rims in there.
Oh, rims. Yeah. So two sets of rims.
47 millimeter rims for your summer riding pleasure.
This is a contest where...
I just made that up, but I'll get those guys to do it.
Write him a note, everyone. It's Sven at fat-bike.com. Write him a note. He needs notes.
Right. You know what? I'm not supposed to remember this stuff. I have Alzheimer's.
So this is a contest where you guess what Sven and my beard sheared off, and maybe a bunch of other people at our 100th anniversary party, which is coming up on April Fool's Day. here in Milwaukee. We're going to have
that's actually not April Derby. Fool's, though.
No.
No, I'm just it saying is. We're not fooling them that that's actually the day of our party.
It is actually the day of our 10 party.
10-4. One night. So, over.
And we have things even like past that. We have a, there's a bike sale coming up here in the city the next weekend.
We're not going to say Villain stuck it, are we?
I don't know. I said it in the read-through, and you're like, did you just say that? Let's just say Wheelin' Sprocket Fried Chicken and Waffles Bike Expo is coming up, and we're going to do a beach ride. Fried Chicken and Waffles. I like Fried Chicken and Waffles. I hate that shit. Anyway, and another note that you should send all of you to Sven at fat-bike.com would be, hey, Sven, put up that picture of the stickers for the sticker packs and put those in the store so we can have cool stickers.
Yeah, that might happen. Like,
and then they we had tripped over the Fat Bike links. Whoa.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually, I don't know. We don't have a whole lot of links this week. Although they're good links, though.
I tell you.
They're good ones. This Will Ross is, this is his Facebook page, but it's his description of the race when he won the Berkey.
I like Will Ross. He's awesome. A cool dude, man.
By the way, in about two, 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have him doing his Will Ross thing because we caught up with him at the fatbike.com/Kamba after party.
Nice.
Up there in Cable.
Hey, one thing we should mention here is the Sarma bikes here. They're in Iran rims. They're starting to do a new program where you can make them all kinds of crazy, like pick a Pantone color and a bunch of different paint schemes. Customize your badass set of Sarma Naran.
Carbon fiber.
Yeah. And if you look at this tire science thing and you have a brain like mine, you're going to want to kill yourself. Oh my God. This guy puts sensors in his tires and measures the roundness and
that's not a for real thing, is it?
But it might be a for real thing just for me. I know there are like engineers and people that like have that kind of brain and need to know that stuff. I would just say, oh, okay, ride it with that much pressure.
Would you just say for real?
I'd be like, say what? Put a what in my what?
Yeah, I'm like, the thing should be like that, but I don't need to know how it works.
There were charts there. And I knew that it was going to be good for those people that like charts and that.
Right on.
Mm-hmm. And Coast Kid, Bruce. Hey. Chihuahua, he's on there again.
The old pug.
Yeah, he brought it back.
Apparently. That's what the thing says.
You don't read the damn links that you put in here?
Oh, yeah, I do.
I police them. I skim them.
The police, they cut my toe. You know what we need to do?
What do we need to do?
Check in with Will Ross.
This week's special segment, Will Ross talks to roving reporter, Mr. Sven Hammer.
Hammer.
At the Sawmill Saloon in Hatfield or a town, Sawyer, what is it? Sealy.
Sealy,
that's Sealy. It.
Smealy.
Sealy, Wisconsin.
Well, we did catch up with him because he was able to join us last year in the studio, which was awesome. We even took pictures of him. He looked so handsome. But after he'd done a couple other races, he was kind of pressed for time, had to get back to Alaska.
Right? Anchorage.
That place. And so I did catch up with him at the Fat Bike after party at the fatbike.com/Kamba Berkey after party. We had a little chat at the sawmill there for the after party, and we're going to listen to that shit right in his ow.
Hey, everybody. Sven from fatbike.com here. We're at the fatbike.com/Kamba, et cetera, after party here after the Fat Bike Berkey, and ran into Will Ross here. He is the winner of the 47K Fat Bike Berkey for the second year in a row, right, Will?
Yeah.
So, awesome, man. Super congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
It looked like it was a pretty tough field out there. I was out on the course taking photos, and about 18K in, I caught you guys the first time. and there was a pretty good pack with a bunch of guys.
Yeah, it was a really big pack this year.
Yeah, so how did the start go up to that point?
The start was, they had the neutral start, which made things a little hectic.
I heard some brakes squealing right before the left turn onto McNaught Road, but...
Yeah, it was... There were a lot of people that hit the trail altogether.
Okay.
Yeah, and then... But we went from that rock-hard road to real soft and kind of squirrely snow on the trail.
Okay, right on the power line?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and the trail was pretty soft. I didn't think that little bit of snow that we got last night would make that big of a difference.
Yeah, we got, 2-3 inches maybe?
Maybe.
And it was right around 32 degrees when it was falling, so it's pretty soggy.
But, yeah, they mixed it up pretty good with the old snow, so it was a soft course.
Okay. Yeah, we saw some good corduroy before everybody got onto it. Yeah. But so that was like 18K in, and then you did a bunch of the course, and you came back, and I caught you guys maybe 10K from the end.
Yeah.
And it looked like you and Brad Bingham were pretty strong at that point. I still saw Jeff Hall and Matt Acker and some other guys in there from that point on. Then lead me to the end of the race.
Well, on the climb up to High Point, I just went to the front and didn't hammer too much, but definitely picked up the pace. And I heard Brad behind me say, go, go, go. So as soon as we did, I looked back and we had a gap. So, we maintained that to the top of the hill. And one, Corey Stelgis, I believe, caught up to us.
Okay.
The three of us rode together from there pretty much until power line, until Corey fell off. And then as soon as we hit the road, Brad and I, we were doing... I mean, we had done a good job of sharing the workload until then. And then we hit the climb on the road, and that's when I made the move.
Okay, yeah, because you came across, 15 seconds ahead of him, maybe?
About 10-ish.
10 seconds ahead of him. Yeah, I know that he said that it just, he was tanked. He was maxed out.
We were both cramping. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, obviously a super effort, and congratulations for your second year in a row.
Yeah, thank you.
Last year you were able to make it to the studio for a post-race fatbike.com, fatbike radio session. I understand you got to get back at work this year.
Back to work.
Right on. So you've taken a lot of time this year to do some other races besides something like the Berkey. You've done some longer races too.
Yeah, I did the Arrowhead 135 and then the Susitna 100.
How do you feel about those races compared to something that's a little more of a sprint for you like the Berkey is?
Oh, those are rough. They made me really nervous. I didn't know that I was going to be able to recover in time. The Arrowhead took me, it was a 16 and a half hour race.
Yeah.
And it took me, I just took a week off the bike entirely. And then after that, I still didn't feel normal for a couple weeks.
And then Susitna was, 2 weeks ago?
Susitna was 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And I was finally starting to feel normal 2 weeks after the Susitna. Every single day feeling better and better, which was... Gave me a little confidence going into this.
Yeah, sounds like it came through at the right time. So congratulations on the win, and hope we see you here next year.
Yeah, thank you.
Right on, Will. You can't see the shake, but Will Ross shook my hand. All right, man.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Right on, Will, dude. That was, it was great to, first of all, I caught up with him at the finish line, because this is the first year I've actually managed to catch stuff on the course and get back, because the course was laid out to the finish line before they got there. And I saw him come across the line. He was so ecstatic. It was just beautiful.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, and people should know, this sport is so small. You go to a race like that, you could shake that dude's hand and pat him on the back.
Absolutely. And Brad Bingham was second.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a super friendly dude. Everybody's friendly. That's the whole point of this. We do have 2 more minutes. Hello, Cola.
I'd just like to say congratulations on your 97th show.
Well, there you go. Congratulate us to our 97th. Get the hell out of here. You should be sleeping already. Bye. What?
You've been listening to Fat Bike Radio's weekly dose of fat. Find us on the web at fat-bike.com/radio. We'll see you next time.